Gerald Walker's 2011 memoir, Street Shadows, told of how he was an honor student on the south side of Chicago when he got caught in what he calls the urban undertow, drugs, drinking, guns. He swam against that current, but then suddenly found himself a fish out of water at the University of Iowa Writing Workshop, eating sushi, studying with author Marilyn Robinson. Street Shadows is a great read. But Gerald's new memoir, The World in Flames, tells the story of what happened before his thug life, and it's a doozy, because Gerald Walker was the son of blind black parents who joined a white supremacist end-of-world religious cult. No wonder he struggled to grow up. He was told he wasn't going to. Gerald is now a professor at Emerson College. Professor Walker, welcome.
Thank you.
What a story. I realized about halfway through that I knew of this religious cult that your family was in. Many may also remember there was a 60-minute segment on the Worldwide Church of God. Its leader, Herbert W. Armstrong, who was also host of the World Tomorrow TV show, founder of the magazine The Plain Truth. How big was this group?
It was a big deal. There are some estimates that the membership reached as high as 150,000 at its peak.
Yeah, well, and it was a white supremacist segregationist organization. How did your two black parents get involved?
That is the question of the day. Well, one thing that Armstrong didn't do was to advertise it as a white supremacist doomsday cult. Mm-hmm. That was simply an undercurrent in the religion. They joined it because of its philosophy of Armstrong being God's apostle who was here to reveal the mysteries of the Bible. A part of the mystery was that God had made his son in his image. And his image was white, according to Armstrong. Jesus was white. And therefore, whites are superior on a genetic scale. That was something that we were taught was right from the Bible. Mm-hmm. And we would accept it as fact. And that it was a part of God's big plan that whites should rule this world and the afterlife.
Well, and I'm thinking, too, that your parents are black and blind. So when they're walking into all these church services, it may not have, you know, there's a metaphor there. They might have been blind to what became obvious, you know, that this was a cult. But also they probably couldn't see that they were really one of the few blacks in this white
scene. Well, that's true. But now here's the strange structure of how the church was set up. The church congregations themselves were segregated. And so the few blacks in Chicago who happened to be a part of this church would convene at one site. So the congregation drew from different communities. So the church we attended, which had about 150 members, they were probably 99% black.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's where we went on a weekly basis. It wasn't until we had one of our 7 annual festivals that people convened from regions. And that's when we would go into a huge airline hangar, for instance, because Armstrong didn't build churches. We rented places. And then we would see the extent of our minority status. We walked into a place where there were 15,000 people, and we were one of a half dozen blacks.
Right. Well, it led to things like your mother couldn't watch the television series Roots, which everyone in the world watched, because it would counter what she'd been taught. She'd been taught that the Bible condoned slavery, and so she didn't want to see that. So, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. There are two stories that are parallel here, life in the religious cult, but also life with blind parents.
Right, and their blindness was so central to our understanding of what it meant to have parents with a disability that we were surprised when we found out that our friends' parents could see. And then we were even surprised when our friends pointed out to us that our parents couldn't see, because we got so used to it at times that their inability to see was not something we recognized on a daily basis.
Well, and then let's go to the parallel story. It was also less remarkable to you that you were preparing for end times, for the Great Tribulation. Talk about the impact of being a child who's being raised to have your life shortened. I mean, you tried to convert your best friend, Paul, and there's this wonderful scene where you're lecturing to him and you're saying, look, when Jesus comes back, you know, we're all going to be made gods and we're going to fly around and there might be lightning bolts and shields involved. And your friend Paul says, gosh, my parents chose the wrong religion.
And my response to him is, we didn't choose it. It chose us. And that was the good news. The alternative to being selected would be perishing in a lake of fire in 1975. Mm. We would be spared that, but our friends wouldn't.
And you start to think, I don't want to be chosen. I want to be a normal kid. And then it starts to fall apart. I mean, your brother Timmy, who was an evangelistic about this, I mean, he was just going to keep you all in line in your belief in this. It sounds like one of the reasons was that he was in love with Bobby Fischer, the chess champion. Bobby Fischer was a member of this cult.
Yes, he was.
But then it starts to unravel. Bobby Fischer quits. 60 Minutes expose. Other people are quitting. You're in a cold home with government-supplied food and Goodwill clothing, even though you're tithing more and more to this church. What happens to you?
My brother Timmy was the person I idolized most in this world. And he was, in fact, evangelistic when it came to the church. He believed more than anyone. He read the Bible as a hobby. And so when he found out that the church wasn't all it was said to be, he sort of recruited me away from the church. What I didn't know at the time was that I was leaving one false prophet for another. Hmm. Tim, as it turns out, believed that because we had been duped by Armstrong, that the way to recoup the lost time would be to sort of emulate that. So he began to be a street hustler of sorts.
Brought you into alcohol and drug use? Yeah.
All of that, perhaps in some warped sense of retaliation to Armstrong.
That's where this book ends. Your first memoir picks up there, The Thug Life. But I'm almost afraid to ask, what happened to Timmy?
Timmy died of a heroin overdose. Hmm. And I think it's a direct result of what happened to us in this cult. I mean, I could blame Mr. Armstrong for a lot of things, but if I had to choose only one, it would be the demise that resulted with my brother Tim for having the thing that he cared about the most in this world, and that was this church. By having that belief ripped from him was something that he simply couldn't recover from.
How about you? You end The World in Flames by saying there's so much you don't know about other religions and beliefs. Someone suggests to you, hey, this sounds like the Jonestown cult where everybody killed themselves. And you say no, and then you realize, well, wait a minute, it could have been. So you end up saying there's so much I don't know about religion and about being black.
Right, and because I didn't know what that meant. I mean, you mentioned Roots, the television program. My mother didn't want to watch it because she feared it would contradict what we were taught by the church. And I didn't want to watch it because I didn't see the relevance. I felt that I had more in common with Noah than I did with Kunta Kinte. And so when the church collapsed and I realized that I needed to replace those beliefs with something else, beginning with my identity as an African-American, what occurred to me as the definition of being an African-American was what I saw around me. And so being black meant not caring about school, being a delinquent, using drugs, using alcohol.
Because that's all you saw.
It's what I saw, what defined what I was supposed to be as an African-American male.
Well, that changed. You bookend the book with a visit that your family makes to Petra. Now, the prophecy of the church had been that you would join other followers, go to the ancient city of Petra where Israelites camped. You make this trip with your wife and children years later. What happens when you're on the path in Petra?
Well, I thought that this visit would have no emotional impact on me whatsoever. We would see it. We would get a big chuckle about the fact that I believed I would be living there for 3 years while the world fell to anarchy. So I joked about it with my kids and my wife. We thought it was funny. But at one point, I saw a sign that pointed towards the top of one of the mountains. And the sign read, "View the end of the world." And I stopped in my tracks. I could not bring myself to follow that path to see what was proclaimed to be the end of the world. I just couldn't do it. It shows that the impact of that church is so deep on people that even if you find yourself teaching at Emerson College, you have kids, you have a spouse, everything seems okay, and then suddenly something will hit you. And you realize that the roots of that church are deep and that the damage can't be so easily undone, even though I've been out of the church for over 35 years.
That's Gerald Walker. The memoir in which he tells that story is The World in Flames, A Black Boyhood in a White Supremacist Doomsday Cult. Quite something. Gerald, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Robin.